It is. Possible breaking news here in the Philippines. Rachel in Tucson says, Dateline Manila, Philippines. I've got to hear from this about this from Tucson. About 30 communist guerrillas on Sunday. That would indeed be today here. Attacked an international airport under construction in the central Philippines using bombs to destroy equipment and seizing guns from the guards. If any of you have any update on that, I would certainly appreciate it. I don't know what to... airport they're talking about there, but I am very curious. So the communists on the move here in the Philippines. Jeffrey Wands is my guest. He sees dead people, and we'll be right back. You know, without love, I really can't think of a really good reason for being alive. John in Bronx, New York, Jeffrey, comes up with one here that I'm sure you're going to need to deal with. He says, sweet talking lies or the truth? The truth is, John says, that the dead are dead. They don't know anything about what's going on, and they're not going to be made alive again until the rapture and the resurrection of the just and of the unjust. What do you say?
Well, you know what? People have their belief systems, and they're going to believe what they want to believe. But I find it to be very interesting that more and more people are having experiences where loved ones come through to them, and not just in, you know, the aspect of me doing it, but everybody has their own personal experiences. So, I mean, when you get stuff like that, it's understandable. That's his belief system, so he's entitled to his opinion.
You're absolutely right about how many people are having these experiences. And I interviewed an anesthesiologist last week. God, it was fascinating. I don't know if you... Did you happen to catch that program?
No, I didn't. I wish I would have.
Go back if you're able to listen to programs and take a listen to that one. My God, it was interesting. He's going down really a lot of the same paths we are, not quite as psychically, but more scientifically. Now... is your psychic ability increasing as you get... How old are you now, Jeffrey?
I'm 42.
42. Do you think it's increasing as you get older or decreasing?
I think as I'm getting older, I'm more relaxed with it. So I would say to you that I probably handle it better now than I did before.
Okay. I really have always wondered. There is something magical, mystical... about mirrors. I know Raymond Moody very well. I've interviewed him for years and years now. I know about the psychomanium. And what is it about mirrors, Jeffrey? What is it?
I think it's, especially with what Raymond does, it's the idea of, I think, making that connection, because that mirror is like the other door, and it allows us to get into that state, and maybe it's more of the unconsciousness coming up more so than anything else. But I know when I, you know, it's funny because when I went down to Raymond's house and I had that experience, Raymond had told me that there were two other mediums that had come down that had the same experience. So it was kind of interesting. And you know Raymond. Raymond's very science-oriented.
No, I do. all right, let's talk for a moment. It's October. It's ghost-to-ghost month. Yes, I will be doing ghost-to-ghost this year, I do believe. Now, we all know there are ghosts, or at least ghosts certainly reported again and again and again and again. What can you tell me about why a spirit chooses to inhabit frequently the residence where it passed away? Why does that happen? Why are these spirits still on Earth?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. You're saying with the residents, I find it to be when I'm called into a house, it usually is really more connected to the land than the actual house. It'll depend also with that soul and how that soul has died, or, you know, how that soul has moved on. I remember probably about 4 or 5 months ago, I had gotten a call, and a woman asked me to come to her house. They were having problems at her house. And what had happened was, before she had bought the house, there was a murder in the house, and it wasn't disclosed to her. And her two kids were waking up in the middle of the night telling the mother that there was a gentleman in the house with a shotgun, and he was pointing it at them. And what had happened was the gentleman that was the owner before had killed his family and killed himself.
Yes.
And that energy was lingering, and, you know, that was what was causing. And I find it to be, especially with kids, kids are extremely open and extremely sensitive, and they're not polluted yet, you know, in the way that we are.
Mm-hmm. In your case, you learned you were psychic at a very early age, six, and then sort of allowed that to develop. I think with other adults, particularly those not exposed or not predisposed to be thinking about this sort of thing, we actually begin to form, as we get older, a barrier against it, don't we?
Oh, very much so, because our belief systems come in, we get cynical. You know, it's different things that take place. And I think it's also based on some of our different life experiences. I mean, the thing that makes me crazy, it's like, you know, people will say, how do I know? I don't believe it. I don't see it. I think more and more what science should be doing is looking at it more in a multidimensional way. They don't look at this. They look at it in one way. And you get the people that are skeptic that do this potentially kind of studies. They only do it in one way. They forget that we live in a world that's extremely multidimensional.
You just hit on something that really has been fascinating me of late. Of course, a lot of theoretical physicists and others we talk to here on the air talk about multiple dimensions, 11 or more. And I'm beginning to think that science and the world that you live in, the paranormal, Jeffrey, are beginning to come together. And it seems like it's not all that far away now. Maybe it's just because I do this program, but it really does seem as though science and the paranormal have this meeting place that I can almost see now when there's going to be discovery of another a universe, a parallel universe, and it's going to begin to answer some of the questions that people like yourself generate with what you're saying. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think it's getting closer. I think it's science's responsibility to do better science. I think what happens is you get some people, and I know the Russell Targs and, you know, some of the other great people that are involved with doing the research, which is good, but you have other people that are like very one-dimensional in their thought process that are really not looking at the fact that you've got millions and millions of people all through the world, you know, that are having experiences. And this is not like, you know, because they're doing mushrooms or they're, you know, they're doing some sort of hallucinogens. They're doing it more because they're actually experiencing it.
That's not to rule out hallucinogens as a path, according to some guests I've had. How do you feel about that?
I think that you don't need to be in that state for it to happen. I think that it'll come at different points. And I think with certain people, our loved ones make those connections when things are needed, you know, and it's, I really believe that they do affect us, and I would probably use you as an example from the standpoint that you went through all this stuff, and then you were able to put, you know, a certain chapter of your life behind you and find happiness with somebody else, and I'm sure, and I would probably, you know, base my professional opinion on it, that, you know, your lovely wife that you lost had a big say in it.
Oh, I really absolutely believe that.
Well, and you know, my belief system, you know, nothing happens by accident.
Near-death experiences, that's been another one that has confused me. It seems as though people who have had NDEs frequently turn their lives around. I mean, if they were, you know, doing something somewhat unsavory or whatever, after they have their NDE and a life review, that sort of thing, they turn their lives around. Well, it's always seemed, I mean, maybe that's part of their soul map, as you call it.
I would say, yeah, definitely.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, because I think what will happen is you get these people and, you know, they're very self-destructive and they go through something horrible. It could be, you know, drug-related, alcohol-related, car accident, whatever it is. And I think that when they go through these near-death experiences, it definitely changes, you know, your path. It makes you maybe recognize your path where you wouldn't have seen it before.
But they are privy then to information about the other side and how it all works that the rest of us are not, so that if we're leading a somewhat unsavory life, we will continue to do so until the day we die, and then presumably be punished for it in a way that somebody who had an NDE and corrected their life might not be.
I would say to you, probably the punishment would come from the fact that you would come back in the incarnation and have to do it all over again and go through the same aspect of it. I mean, I think that's part of the soul map, from the point that they do go through these, you know, NDEs at that point, because they're supposed to really enlighten their path and, you know, end up being where they're supposed to be.
Hmm. Okay. Can you, Jeffrey, essentially do this at will? If you mentioned earlier you had a client, so obviously you have clients. You have people who come to you to speak to or to find out about a loved one who has passed on frequently. You do that kind of work.
I do that, and there's other people that come to me that would be in a business way where, you know, they would want direction in a business sense or a life path. So it would be different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a couple of therapists that I work with, so it'll vary with the need. I have a woman who is a trauma therapist who I get nothing but people that have lost, you know, kids to suicide. And I work with her closely from the point that she helps the families get closure in one sense and deal with their grief, and then I help them with the closure of the lost person.
Okay. So many psychics, Jeffrey, seem to tell people what they want to hear. And the more you pay for it, the more you hear what you want to hear.
Well, not this one.
Not that one. All right. Well, then my question to you is this. When you get somebody sitting in front of you or that you are consulting and you look at their soul path or soul map, if you will, and you see really something tragic, really something awful coming up, do you tell them about it?
I will tell them in a way where I wouldn't say, God forbid, if you were sitting in front of me and I would say to you, you know, you're going to die 3 weeks from now. I will tell them in a way to tell them to look for this bump in the road, and hopefully they can prevent this bump in the road. In a lot of cases,
but that's not a bump in the road. That's more like a ravine opening up after a 9-point earthquake.
You're right.
You know, you're going to die.
Agreed. But just as that as an example, or I've had it with other people where, you know, I know a relationship is going to end, I will give them a heads up. There's a way of handling people, and I think with my experience in doing this, I've learned to do it in a way where you can do it soft. I mean, I've seen other people be so blunt and, you know, do it in such a mean-spirited way that I would never do it that way.
But you must, as frequently as not, see some sort. I mean, life is full of tragedy and death and all sorts of things.
So,
it's part of life.
I usually will give a person a heads up. I had a situation recently where I had a young woman come. She hadn't spoken to her dad in 12 years. And I nudged her about getting in contact with the father, and she was able to resolve with the father, and the father ended up dying 4 weeks later. So things like that, you know, you can do it in a way where you nudge them or you strongly suggest that they should take care of this immediately without scaring them and saying, oh, my God, you know, your loved one's going to pass in 2 weeks.
A nudge. I mean, for example, do you say somebody that you, I mean, if you look at somebody and you see the Grim Reaper ahead, do you say, listen, by the way, have you updated your will?
Or I wouldn't say it that way, or I wouldn't,
no.
I wouldn't say, you know, have you bought life insurance? I would say, you know, this is a good time to get things in order, work relationships through. I would do it in a more subtle way.
Huh. That is pretty subtle for, I mean, somebody who's going to die.
Agreed, but I mean, if you were sitting in front of me and you knew you had 3 weeks to live, I've had people ask me point blank and say, you know, it'll depend. I had people come to me that have had cancer that I know they're going to have a very short period of time, and I had one client say to me, how much time do I have? You know, can I do this, this, and this? So in that case, it's good. In other cases, it would just pertain to how much I think the person can handle it. I mean, the bad side of what I do is you do get some people that are not legitimate that do take advantage of people, and very much so. I mean, I actually talk about this. We have a lot of this in New York. It's the gypsy stuff, where I had this lovely, lovely little Italian woman who wanted her 40-year-old daughter married in the worst way, and she got bled for $80,000 from a gypsy. And they set it up to the point where they said to her, your daughter's going to meet somebody on the train, and they actually had somebody go to the extent who knew this person where they set up a meeting. And, you know, this went on and on and on, and I remember this woman coming to me, and I'm like, look, you got to call so-and-so I know who's, you know, with this particular crime unit with, you know, NYPD, and you need to stop this because you're getting taken advantage of.
Let me ask you a very blunt question, Jeffrey. What percentage of people who do what you do, in your opinion, are frauds?
You know what? It's a tough thing because I can't answer for everybody else. I think there are a lot of talented mediums out there, and the human effect comes in. I mean, there are certain people. It's like doctors, lawyers. You're going to get frauds. I don't know how I would answer that as far as percentages per se. I tell people probably the best thing to do is to experience, you know, have your own experience first. Like, if you were going to come to someone like myself, you know, have a recommendation, know somebody in your family or somebody that's a friend that would have that connection.
Mm-hmm. You seem to do a lot of personal work, you know, in predicting people's lives or in contacting their loved ones. Jeffrey, there are a lot of people in your line of endeavor who also predict world events. And I wonder if that kind of information comes to you as well, and if so, how?
I've had it, like, probably a couple instances I had with plane crashes where actually in my dream state I will be on the plane that ends up crashing. You know, it'll come that way. I remember the war, you know, the first war with the first President Bush, and I remember dreaming about that like 6 months before it happened, with seeing the desert and seeing it in that way. But usually when I get world events, it'll come more in a dream state. The one other time that I would say to you that I had like a sense of something major happening would have been when John F. Kennedy Jr. died. I had this feeling at that time, the same thing with Princess Diana, where there was going to be something major in the world that was going to have a world effect.
Huh. Do you get pretty much what you want to get, Jeffrey? In other words, if you're wanting to find the loved one of a client, that's what you get. Or if you're seeking world events, do you get those? Does it work that way?
No, it doesn't. I will sit with somebody. Let's just say, for example, you know, you wanted to contact your wife and I was speaking to you. It may be a grandparent, it may be a grandmother first that will be the table setter that will bring her through. Initially, I usually get somebody else before that person will come through.
Do you enjoy your work, or do you find it, you know, as in the case of the television program with Ms. Dubois, it seems as much of a curse many times as a blessing.
I love what I do in the sense of the result. I have only, I would say, in the last 3-4 years, I'm more at peace with it since I've been doing national TV, and I got through getting over the bump of not being afraid of it so much. And I you know, it's amazing because people, like, every time I do national TV, I'll get these emails from people. It'll be about, you know, people, unsolved murders and things of that nature, and they write all these emails, and I try to pick out things that I could try to help people with. And I think that's probably the best part of what I do, in regards that if I can bring that little ounce of closure to somebody, it's going to bring them a little peace.
Mm-hmm. How do you delineate between what you do and what so-called remote viewers do?
I think that they're very similar, except that in my experiences with a remote viewer, it's probably more so because they're going after a particular object or a particular thing. I think with me, I think it's a part of it. I think it's a different form of it.
Remote viewing is a very structured, in its purest form, very disciplined thing, and they try and remove all ego and all, you know, current, ego is the right word, I guess, that's right, and emotions from what they do. A psychic or a medium doesn't really do that, do they?
No, and we do feel, you know, especially I'm a dad, I have kids, when I sit with somebody who lost a kid, of course I'm going to feel that. Might be a good way to do it sometimes, but I think it would be too robotic, and I don't think I would be as effective from that point.
So, anyway, you say you're now pretty much at peace with yourself with regard to what you do, and even being in the media and doing it, you're still at peace. That must be if you go on television, for example, mm-hmm. and you're required to perform on cue, that's a little rough, isn't it?
It is, but you know what? I've gotten to the point now, it's kind of funny, every time I do something with cameras or I do something like that, we have all kinds of problems with equipment. I did a book signing today, and they had given me a cordless mic, and sure enough, I went through 3 cordless mics. It was very funny, but I'm at a point now, like, in front of the cameras, I don't even pay attention to the fact that the cameras are there. You know, I'm good in the sense that I'm in my zone, and I'm focused on what I got to do.
Yeah,
and I'm not afraid to be wrong. I'm not God by any means. And I tell people, you know, this is not 100% science. I can be having a bad day. You know, it's like an athlete who, you know, you could be.
Yeah, good to hear you say that. Another Door Opens, in fact, is your book. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we get back. It's break time. I'm Art Bell. You are indeed from the sort of foggy, misty Manila this afternoon. Jeffrey Wands is my guest, and indeed he has written a book, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. I get a lot of emails sometimes that say, how come everybody who comes on the show has written a book, selling a book or something? Well, that's kind of the trade-off, and it's a good trade-off that we make. Indeed, a lot of our guests have written books. In the case of Jeffrey, Another Door Opens is the name of his book, and I personally consider it to be an excellent trade-off. We give them an opportunity to promote their book a little bit, and they give us a very, very good idea of what's in it. And we'll do that in a moment. The news I gave you apparently is getting confirmed. About 10 fast blasts here. About 30 communist guerrillas have indeed attacked a Japanese-funded international airport being built in the central Philippines. And I'll just have to update you from there. Once again, Jeffrey Wands, your book is Another Door Opens, Jeffrey. Why that title?
I just thought it was very apropos from the point of what I deal with every day. And it's the understanding that I try to tell people death is a door. And when you open that door, it's a whole different experience.
Mm-hmm. What did you try to do in the book? I mean, what was the point of the book?
I think the main point of the book is I put some experiences that I had with death. I used actually some clients that I met with that we interviewed. And it was interesting because I have one story in the book. It was a husband and wife. And, you know, men are normally skeptical. And they had lost a child, and they were kind of blown away by the experience. They ended up bringing their daughter, who was young at the time, and it's just part of the healing process that's in there. And then the other part of the book that I talk about is my experiences working with therapists and their perspective of what I do and the importance of the whole healing process of death and the different stages of what we go through in that healing process. And then I also talk about the idea of dreams. And it's interesting, I always tell people, if you ever have a dream where you're in a snowstorm or a blizzard, make sure you go out and buy a lotto ticket. Because I actually had one of the lotto winners that had that dream, and her dead father-in-law gave her the winning numbers.
Have you ever taken the journey of trying to find out about your own future?
I ask periodically for things. And it's interesting, before I wrote my first book and I did my second book and TV and radio, they had come to me one night in a dream and said to me that you're going to be doing media. And I was laughing at the time and I had no interest in doing it. I was very happy with just having my clientele and just leaving it the way it was. And I think that's where I got a glimpse, and also getting a glimpse of me having two sons and my wife.
That's quite a bit. Have you ever attempted to look even further ahead, to see where your life is going, to see where even perhaps your life ends?
I've gotten feelings. I mean, I've had this conversation with my wife, and my wife gets extremely upset with me about, you know, when it would be my time to go and, you know, how I'd want to go. And, you know, I kind of try to hint with her sometimes that I know that I'm going to be going at a certain point. And, mm-hmm. you know, she gets extremely upset, like anybody's wife would.
Indeed. A few weeks ago, I did a very, I thought, very important program on the subject of suicide, Jeffrey, taking one's own, taking your own life. What can you tell me about that?
Well, in my experiences, I have one therapist that I work with. It's all kids' suicides. I would say to you that a good 94% of those suicides that I deal with are people that are actually, you know, do have mental illness, that are taken into a place where they just lose it. And then you come across those 6% that are the ones that do it out of spite, or they do it out of anger at that particular time. But, you know, a lot of people ask me, like, do you still get to heaven if you kill oneself?
Yes.
Do you still get across? And I found it to be the ones that have gone through the, I would say, the, you know, the mental trauma, where it's a mental condition, or it's, you know, schizophrenia or manic depression, or, you know, it could be a medication that triggered it. They seem to come through much stronger than the other 6% that are kind of still caught up in that anger.
Do you think that you need to be mentally Abby normal to take your own life, or do you think that there can be rational decisions made to take your own life, and if so, what's the result of that?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I've had a couple of people that have come to me that have had family members that, you know, went from ALS.
Yes.
And, you know, the Lou Gehrig's disease. And in two of those situations, those people killed themselves because of the fact that they didn't want the end result of that terrible disease.
Is there any, can you give, right, no, that's really, I agree, that may be rational, Jeffrey.
I mean, not that I'm encouraging suicide by any means.
No. Yeah. My question is, with regard to the other side or whatever you know about the other side, what would be the path on the other side for somebody who had done that?
The experiences I've had where I've sat with people, they've come through right away in that element. They understand, they made that choice to kind of make it easier on their family. You know, one did it because of financial reasons. One did it because of the pain factor, all different things. But they came across. But, I mean, I wouldn't want to be, like, you know, saying to people out there that we're going to form the Hemlock Society and, suicide. So.
No, of course not. I just, yeah. In other words, you're saying those people cross,
they get across,
in much this.
Absolutely. You know, they get across, they get settled, they understand cognitively, in a way, what they've done, why they've done it.
Is there some sort of karmic price to pay for that?
I got to believe that there is, based on that experience. Granted, the souls that I've been dealing with haven't reincarnated yet, but I would be inclined to believe that you would pick up some residual karma in the process.
Well, I wonder if in that case reincarnation would be considered a good thing or a bad thing. I
guess it would probably pertain to how you would come in. But, I mean, I remember this one in particular. This woman was very diligent and very deliberate about doing it. They had gotten to the point where they exhausted, you know, a tremendous amount of financial resources. The family was going to lose the house, and she just decided that it was time. Uh-huh. You know, she didn't want to put her family through anything more.
Well, I know what the traditional religious view of that is, and I just can't think of a God that is vengeful. I mean, if in the case you just cited, for example, that almost all the financial resources are gone, the person's in great pain, so forth and so on, they take their own life. I just can't, in the world that I walk in and I understand, I cannot imagine that person being punished in some terrible way for what they've done.
I would be inclined to believe that too. I mean, I haven't seen it from my experiences with the clients I've dealt with. Not that I would encourage people to do that, but most definitely I could probably count four instances, and they came through in a very good way. They were peaceful. You know, they were happy where they were. They had found, you know, a sense of contentment.
Okay. Where do you plan to go from here, Jeffrey? I mean, are you going to just sort of be happy and satisfied with what you've done thus far, continue to have clients?
I think probably the thing I would like to do maybe more in time would be to teach and to get people to be more aware of their own abilities. That probably would be one of the things that I would like to do. I mean, I'm a big radio fan. You know, I had to do a show in New York, not to the degree of what you're doing, but, you know, I do a weekly show. Of course, in my situation, we play music because it's an adult contemporary format. But, you know, I would say probably I love doing radio. That would be something that I would, you know, want to continue to do.
Mm-hmm. There is no better way to communicate. Television, of course, requires pictures and visual support for whatever is being done, where, of course, in radio you can kind of create a mental picture that just, I don't know, television actually takes away from in many instances. So radio is a wonderful medium in every way I can think of. I'll tell you what, shortly we will begin to take calls, and I'm sure a million people are going to want to talk to you. One thing I would like to stay away from, though, Jeffrey, here on the radio, is people to call up to get readings from you. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to allow that to occur.
No problem.
Simply because it satisfies the one person who calls, but is a tremendous kind of bore to the rest of the audience. So I would hope that the people that would call with general questions about psychic ability, about the other side, about talking to people on the other side, that kind of thing. That's what I'm looking for audience, if you can hear me, not individual readings. That's sort of a trap that I think that a lot of people in radio fall into. Of course, if you do individual readings, the phones light up like a Christmas tree, but it's just a trap that talk show hosts fall into. So what, that they light up? It's just going to bore the hell out of the rest of the audience. So I want to stay away from that, folks. So don't ask for specific readings, please, but rather generally kind of interview Jeffrey in the way I have been, if that's okay with you, Jeffrey.
Oh, absolutely. It's my honor to share my knowledge. It would be great.
All right. Is what you do, Jeffrey, hereditary? Do you believe it's hereditary? In other words, was your mom or your father in some way psychic?
I had on my mom's side, my grandmother went blind at a certain age. And I definitely remember, my mom's mom being extremely in tune and having the ability to hear your voice and to describe what you looked like. So I would say, yes, part of it is hereditary, but I think that we all have it. So I wouldn't say to you that it just has to be in families.
You think we all have it?
Oh, without a doubt.
Perhaps we do, but as I mentioned earlier, as many of us grow older that don't look into this sort of topic, we build a wall against it. So are there people who are psychically thick as bricks?
Oh, absolutely. I call them stubborn people.
Stubborn people?
Yeah, they're definitely stubborn. They definitely have their own aspects. You know, no matter what you do, that's probably the worst part of my job. I call it, it's pulling a rabbit out of your hat. You know, they want you to do the smoke and mirrors thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could give them, you know, the license plate of the car. And I laugh. The thing that I get all the time from people is, oh, you could have Googled me. You could have get all this information. If I had time to Google everybody, it would be crazy. So, but you do get that. So,
yeah, I'm sure you do get that. I'm sure you get a lot of people who are just thinking that you're doing this for, and that's something to ask about, actually. You're doing this for a living, right?
Yes, I am.
So you charge people to do what you do?
Yes, I do.
And I'm sure that alone makes people skeptical about what you do.
Yes, but when I do the groups and I do the things that I'm doing from that standpoint, like I did this thing 2 weeks ago for breast cancer, I wasn't getting paid for it. I did a large group. We had 500 people. I mean, I'm big about giving back, so I can't say that all the things I do when I do the radio show, even though I know you were talking about like not liking the idea of the readings and the whole bit. I mean, when I do the readings and stuff like that, I'm not getting paid for the radio show. You know, I do it because I love radio.
Oh, so do I. But but again, as I mentioned, that is kind of a trap that you fall into.
Agreed, but unfortunately, you know, people do like it.
And I know. I'm well aware of it. I mean, you're only satisfying one.
Yeah.
Person, and we have a giant audience out there that's interested in this sort of general topic. So let's give it a try. Let's see how we do. Here on the first time caller line, we've got somebody or another for Jeffrey Wands. You're on the air.
Good day. How's it going?
It's going just fine, sir.
I was going to ask what he thought about 2012 and all the things leading up to that.
All right, good. I'm glad you did. There's been a lot of speculation, Jeffrey. I know this is not necessarily your forte, but 2012, of course, is the end of the Mayan calendar, and many people want to know whether it's the end of everything else.
Well, I mean, I would say to you, I haven't had any indication of that, so I wouldn't go out on the limb tonight and say to you that I'm 100% convinced in that time frame. I mean, I know we're constantly being tested in the world, and I'm sure, you know, you were talking about North Korea and, you know, the whole idea of the nuclear stuff, but I'm not inclined to believe that we're not going to be here in 2012.
Is there anything at all, as you look out ahead of all of us, Jeffrey, if you ever do that, if you ever try to simply look out ahead, you don't see any sudden darkness or a sudden wall or inability to see past a certain time, as in the whole world ending, do you?
Not yet so far. I will definitely send you an email if I get to that point.
Okay. First, make that wild card line. You're on the air with Jeffrey Wands. Hi. Hello? Going once. Oh, for some reason, I guess I didn't push the button. Let's try it now. Wild card line, there you are. You're on the air now.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? This is so strange. I knew I would get through tonight for some reason. I've tried so many times, but something just told me I'd get through tonight. Jeff, it's really a pleasure to hear you. I have a few questions. First question is, my mom passed about 4 years ago, and I notice I'm picking up a few of her traits, just to give you, for instance, she used to grunt a lot, like a, like that. It used to annoy me. I find myself doing it now. And she used to cut out coupons obsessively, and I'm finding myself doing that now, and it drives me nuts. And is that something unusual? Do you find that?
I don't think it's unusual. I mean, I find it to be the departed find a way to get across, and maybe it's your mom's way of being cute in her own way and letting you know that she's there, and that's why she's doing what she's doing. You know, so it's not unusual. I mean, I've had many different forms of contacts. I've had clients who have gotten, you know, their departed people up on their answering machine, which are EVPs. We've done other stuff where in pictures, you know, we've actually gotten spirits up in pictures. So,
you just hit on something I really want to talk to you about, Jeffrey. Sure. I have EVP. Mm-hmm. I've of course had people who do EVPs. It's a non-profit group up in Utah, and my God, I need them back on the air again here shortly. EVPs are probably the single most convincing piece of evidence to me personally, Jeffrey. I mean, I have looked at this so carefully, and I just can't find a way to knock it down. I can't find a way to shoot holes in it, Jeffrey. What do you think of EVPs?
Well, I'll give you a good example. We did a Maury show that coincided with the release of the movie White Noise with Michael Keaton. Uh-huh. And we had some people on that on the show that actually, one woman in particular, had gotten EVPs from her daughter that was killed in a car accident. And I've done some stuff with a friend of mine where we've gotten EVPs on a digital recorder in a cemetery, where we've actually gotten voices that have said, you know, get out. Mm-hmm. And you can hear them clearly. So I am a firm believer, if I can hear them, why can't they come up on tape recorders?
Absolutely. By the way, folks, it's electronic voice phenomena, and it's people who are able to record either digitally or on tape the voice of those on the other side. And I really am a believer in this, and I'm not exactly sure all the time what we're getting. I find, Jeffrey, that a lot of the EVPs that I've heard, a disturbing percentage of them, number one, are children. And number two, a disturbing percentage of them are disturbing.
Yeah, because I think that's where we get into what we talked about earlier, the idea of the good spirits and the bad spirits. You are going to, in some cases, those EVPs are more lower form energy, you know, which are, you know, basically spirits that haven't moved on. But in other cases, you will get some really good EVPs where, you know, there are departed family members that just want to come through and let you know that they're there.
Well, why are so many so damn scary? Like, it's dark, it's cold in here. Get the hell out. You know, the typical Halloween scare the hell out of you kind of message.
I think in those cases what happens is what I was saying earlier about the idea of the bad spirits. You're going to get some of these souls that are either poltergeists or souls that are kind of lingering around that are still carrying a lot of the anger that they had in the life.
Well, that's kind of where I was going. Do you you then believe mm-hmm. that when you get to the other side, Jeffrey, the personality traits you had, if you were a rotten SOB on this side, you're still likely going to be a rotten SOB on the other side?
You do carry that over. I mean, it drives me crazy when I see other psychics that talk about the fact that, you know, the afterlife, we're all holding hands and we're singing Kumbaya. And I don't think that's the case. I mean, that's the evolution of the soul, and it's the process of the soul. And you're going to get some negative energy that does linger because we have good and evil in the world.
All right, then. It absolutely makes sense. Jeffrey Wands is my guest. We're at the top of the hour. The phone lines are absolutely going berserk, as you might imagine they are. Once again, my little caveat for talking with Jeffrey, please do not ask for a personal reading, but rather keep your questions or your inquiries in the general category, which will be of interest to all. From Manila in the Philippines, with a strange haze over the city, I'm Art Bell.